Gilchrist moves over behind Kemp. He goes back to pass again. Runs out to the right.
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton. At the 10. At the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Mario Williams has him around the waist and he drops him. Super Mario gets in on the sack party.
Yeah! Let's go, Buffalo! Come on, baby!
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the greatest show in sports.
Ball into the end zone. It is intercepted. It is picked off. Aaron Williams made a leaping interception in the end zone.
Hear all the action, all the excitement of Buffalo Bills football. Right here on
The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York. 10 days before the NFL draft, and we focus on the draft a lot during tonight's show. We'll start with Bills receiver Kevin Elliott as he continues his recovery from a serious knee injury. Aaron Aloysius, the man behind the website Draft Breakdown, joins us at 8, and NFL agent Jack Becta joins us at 8:30 to tell us what's wrong with mock drafts. To crease up the middle, dodges the man at the 5, into the end zone, touchdown, Fred Jackson!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Start of another week here at One Bills Drive, and just a week and a half until the NFL Draft, day one of the NFL Draft coming up on Thursday, May 8th. Good evening, welcome to this program. Hope you had a great weekend. We've got Bills football, NFL football to talk about tonight, and we want to hear from you, as always. Phone lines open. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. This deep into the pre-draft season, I guess one thing we should let you know is that if you have a favorite player you want the Bills to draft, now's the time to phone us up and let us know. Make the case for your favorite guy. We'll talk about that. We're going to talk a lot about the draft tonight and every night from now until May 8th. But we also want to talk a little bit about draft strategy. In particular, a quote that you always hear personnel people say. You always hear them say, well, yeah, for the most part, you hear them say, we're going to draft the best available player, regardless of need. Is that realistic? I don't think it is. I think it's very rare that a team will ignore their needs and draft best available player. The Bills have essentially said that publicly this year. Doug Whaley saying a couple of times over the last couple of weeks that the Bills are in a pretty good position right now because they're in position to draft the best available player. They don't have any crying needs. I think that does, in some respects, I think that is true as far as this year's Bills draft. They don't have any starting positions just hanging out there waiting to be filled. So maybe this is one year where if the Bills do that, and they've said it, and if they do that, draft the best available, then maybe it makes sense. But it hasn't always been that case for them or many teams in the NFL. Everybody will tell you, we're going to draft the best available player. We're not going to reach for a player that is not high on our board just to fill a need. That's what teams will tell you. But do you believe that? Do you believe that to be the case? Should they? Do teams really ignore their needs? Is it realistic to ignore a team's needs? I don't think it is. I don't think any team, especially now, with teams expected to make rapid improvement, teams, owners, franchises don't wait for 5-year plans, 3-year plans. They want to see results now, yesterday. So waiting for, drafting a player that might not play right away, contribute right away because he's at a position that you already have some players, I think maybe more than ever now, teams can't afford to do that and don't do that. And I was thinking about recent examples when the Bills clearly drafted the best available player. I think you got to go to C.J. Spiller just a couple of years ago for the Buffalo Bills. They did not have a crying need at running back then in 2010. They didn't, but they drafted the guy that was high on their board, a dynamic playmaking running back who I think all of us believe still has a lot more to give in terms of dynamism and making plays. They drafted C.J. Spiller and had a stockpile of running backs for a little while. Marshawn Lynch was still on the roster then. Obviously, Fred Jackson was on the roster and, made room for C.J. Spiller eventually. I believe that's one case when a guy was so high on a draft board that they couldn't ignore it. And they ignored needs to draft a player that they felt was head and shoulders above the rest of them. But I think it's rare. I think it's rare that teams do that. It may be more rare now. What do you think? Can you think of an opportunity or can you think of an example, I should say, in recent years where a team has totally ignored its draft needs and gone for the best available player, stockpiling players at one particular position? How about a couple of years ago when the Redskins drafted two quarterbacks, same draft, RG3 and Kirk Cousins? best available player. Maybe they didn't have a firm conviction on RG3 at that point, even though they traded up to get him at number two. Why draft another quarterback in the same draft? Because they probably had Kirk Cousins rated pretty high. Give us your thoughts on that. Phone lines are open, 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at the John Murphy Show. Does it make sense to ignore your needs and go to the best available player and not to take a look at what you might need? I don't think it does, especially, as I said, with the short leash that most franchises have on their general managers and coaches. I don't think you can afford to do that. A tweet from Jamie who says, if you ignore your needs, how do you improve? Can you mask your needs enough through scheme to afford to? It's a good point. I mean, you have personnel needs. Do you just ignore them? Matt Williams tweets, and teams always claim their pick was the best player available, along with, quote, he was always our first choice, a redundant quote. Yeah, they do. Teams will do that after the fact. And now before the fact, they'll say, we're going to go to the best player available regardless of our needs. Adam Poveromo tweets, and the Bills should draft a quarterback in rounds 1, 2, and 3. Nothing matters until they find an elite quarterback. It's not EJ. Let's be real. All right, let's really be real. They're not going to draft a quarterback in rounds 1, 2, and 3. And although he may not turn out to be elite, they are committed to EJ Manuel as their guy this year moving forward. So let's be real about that. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The strategy, is it just lip service to say, we're going to draft the best available player and ignore your needs? I don't know that it is. I think, Nick tweets in, quarterback is number one need. If EJ can stay healthy, the Bills need to address linebacker depth and stopping the run. They've been horrible. I don't get that one. But a couple of tweets in on this. Can you ignore your needs and just go into the draft and say we're going to take the best player regardless of where our needs are? I mean, the Bills have personnel needs this year, I think. They need weapons around E.J. Manuel. They need protection for E.J. Manuel. They need, I think, a little linebacking help. And even Doug Whaley said the other day they might need some depth at defensive end. Can they ignore those needs as they look at the draft? I don't think so. If they really want to get better and really want to give E.J. Manuel the best chance to succeed, they need to get better around him with a receiving threat, with a tight end, with an offensive lineman to provide protection. That's what I think. So, no, I don't think they can ignore those needs, even though they won't say that. I think you have to be aware of what you need. You have to be aware that you can't drop down on your draft board dramatically to fill a need. But to say that we're going to draft the best available player, I think is false in the NFL. Give us your thoughts. What do you think? The phone line's open. 803-0550 is the number to call. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Just a couple of days removed from the draft luncheon, the media luncheon that the Buffalo Bills held. And Doug Whaley was asked specifically at that luncheon about what the needs are when it comes to depth. And where would you like to build depth on your roster? Here's Whaley's response.
I think with the switch to the 4-3, we could use some more defensive end depth. But we signed some guys that are unproven. So we're excited, and we just got to wait and see there. Linebacker, we're going to probably have to get some depth. But, again, we got some guys like Ty Powell that we're waiting to see. So we got a lot of guys that I would say would give us depth, but they're still a little bit unknown because they haven't been out and showed us what they can do on the field.
Doug Whaley, the Bills general manager, talking about depth, needing depth on the defensive side of the ball because of the switch to a 4-3. Whaley also talked about this extra time. Are we ready for the draft? I think most of us were ready last week for the draft. Of course, we still got 10 days to come. Whaley says this extra 2 weeks that the NFL built in this year for the draft really have not made that much of a difference in the Bills' pre-draft preparations.
Not for us. For us, we actually took a week off over Easter. We wanted to get away, clear our brains. And I'm sure you guys are tired of writing about this. We're tired of thinking about it. So we said, you know what, instead of sitting here banging our heads up against the wall, let's go and refresh ourselves and get ready to attack these last 2 weeks. And so for our schedule, all we did was just push our draft meetings back 2 weeks.
Those draft meetings began in earnest today with scouts coming in, and they'll be meeting all this week getting ready for the NFL draft. Give us your thoughts on the Bills as they approach this draft. Can you draft the best available player? Can you do that year after year? Or do you have to address your needs? Do you have to look at your needs? Phone lines open, 803-0550, the number. Toll free, 1-888-550-2550. You can follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. I think you do have to be well aware of your needs. I don't think anybody has the luxury of ignoring what personnel needs they might have as they approach the draft. You may feel differently. Here is Mark in Clarence. Hi, Mark. Welcome. You're on the show.
Hi, Murph. How are you tonight?
Okay.
I was just listening to what you're saying, and before the Mike Williams thing, I really thought it would be a receiver, and I think that's a great flashy pick, and it would be exciting. But when you watch Doug Marrone at practice and at training camp, you know, he's always with the offensive lineman. I think he really knows how important the position is to the success of the team, and really I think now that that's the direction that they're going to head. And given Marrone's real impact on coach, I think he's involved heavily in coaching the offensive line, that I think that that would be a great way to help our offense the most this year.
Yep, good point. Well put, Mark. Thanks for your call. I do think I know he's heavily involved in the offensive line, and I think I can say from having talked to Coach Marrone over the last year and a half or so since he's been with the team that he believes he might be just one or two players away from having a really good offensive line here with the Buffalo Bills. I think he believes that, and I also believe he has a lot of confidence in his ability to get the best out of those players up front. So, yeah, that would be the argument for an offensive lineman. That would be the argument, I think, for a need-based pick this year in the first round, looking for a guy who can go in there and play right tackle. And maybe, as you said, the addition of Mike Williams and some other moves make the need as for a receiver a little bit less. We're going to talk to one of those receivers who I do believe figures in the mix a little bit on the depth chart, Kevin Elliott. He's going to join us live on the line at 7:30 tonight. Tony on a cell phone. Hi, Tony. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of excited for this draft, mostly because they did a very good job in free agency, and I could see them rounding it out with getting a really good skilled player, whether it be a receiver or tight end. That's available in round one, maybe in two and three, going after a couple offensive linemen, and then addressing the depth needs from them that are out. Because I think a skilled player is the most important thing that they need to get. Doug Marrone, having lineman background, can take guys that are project guys and build them up into a great player. You know, much like how Jason Peters came through would be an example. Understand it's not different coaching staff, different time, but that was a late round pick. You can find some diamonds in the rough. And I think Marrone's strength is, you know, up front, you know, where you could take a lesser talented guy. Cause I think that you're right. They definitely need to protect DJ, and they definitely need to give him a full complement of weapons for him to succeed.
Good point, Tony. Thanks for your call. We're talking about the Bills draft. Round one is 10 days away, and we're talking about draft philosophy. Do you look at best player available? Do you look at filling needs? Tony makes a good point about the needs up front on the offensive line. It's funny. It's almost, I don't want to say we've done a scientific survey, but if you listen to the calls that come in on the show, most folks are in one of two camps. Let's take an offensive lineman. Let's protect EJ. Let's let him, develop. Or let's take an impact skill position player. We have a tweet from Danny P who says, rounds one, two, three, you have to fill holes. You can afford best player available in the back end of the draft. I think that's a good point, too. The draft changes. If you're chasing needs down in rounds four, five, six, seven, I think that's a big mistake. Big, big mistake. Because you might be leaving some really good players up on the board in exchange for drafting someone who won't contribute this year or at all. It's a little bit, the cost is less, obviously, when you get down to rounds four, five, six, seven. Black Ops tweets in, first pick Ebron at tight end, then trade back into the first round and take Zach Martin for right tackle, two starters right away. They don't have a lot of ammunition, the Bills, going into this draft, unlike last year. Did they have nine picks going into the draft last year? I believe they did. This year, only six. So that does limit their flexibility, I would think, going into this draft. Didn't they have nine going into last year? They have a lot less flexibility going into this draft with only six picks, I believe. They wound up with seven last year, seven draft picks. Maybe it was a couple years ago when they had nine. That might have been it, 2012. But you need, that's ammunition. That's working capital And without that kind of working capital, it's tough to say, you know, take Zach Ebron and then trade back into the first round to get Zach Martin at right tackle. How are you going to do all that? What are you going to use to move around like that? Joshua Ramaker tweets, and the Bills don't have any needs that have to be addressed, which gives us a great opportunity to trade back and get a depth guy. Yep, they could trade back. I do think if one of the players they are not in love with is not there at 9, they probably will look to trade back. Andy Proven tweets in, if you're picking 9 and best available for your top need has late first-round rating and there's no trade, then take the best available. There's a couple of variables there. So the best available for your top need, let's say wide receiver, tight end, has a late first-round rating and there's no trade, then take best available. Boy, I don't know. First round, I don't know. I mean, really, would you do that? Basically sacrifice, not sacrifice, you're going to get a good player at 9 no matter who it is, but ignore your need to take the best available at number 9 overall. I think that might be a mistake. I don't think you can ignore your need with the first few picks, with your first few picks. I think you have to be aware of what your need is and what you might be looking for, and you got to maneuver the best you can to make sure you fill that need with a very good player when you have a premium draft pick, especially, you know, top 10. Dynasty MN tweets in, the Bills need to draft Johnny Manziel. They went through 3 or 4 quarterbacks last year. If you don't have a quarterback, you are done. Okay, they believe, you may not, they believe that E.J. Manuel is their quarterback. I believe, that they need more than 1 year of evaluation to wipe the slate clean and look for their next quarterback, whether it's Johnny Manziel or whoever it might be. You may not agree with that, but I think that's their mindset. What about offensive line? There is, a need, obviously, for offensive linemen for the Buffalo Bills. Offensive tackles, 3 good ones, any one of whom might be in the top 10 picks this year, including Greg Robinson from Auburn, Jake Matthews from Texas A&M, Taylor Lewan of Michigan. Calvin Fisher, the Bills' director of college scouting, was asked the other day to talk about those 3, Robinson, Matthews, and Lewan, and maybe rank how they would fit in the NFL.
I think all those guys are really good players, from Greg Robinson to Matthews to Lewan to Zach Martin. I think all those guys are good players. I think it's a matter of where you can take them if they're there for you. But, I mean, at the end of the day, it's a good group of offensive tackles to draft this year. Lewan and Matthews both, I think, can play left and right tackle. So, and in this league today, you're getting the same pass rusher from both sides. So it really doesn't matter which side they're on because you're getting the same pass rusher in this league today. Both defensive ends are going to rush upfield and pass rush you. So they're both athletic enough to play on either side of the ball. I mean, either side, left or right.
Calvin Fisher, the Bills' director of college scouting. In that last sentence, he makes a point that Chris Brown actually wrote about on our website a couple of months ago about how the distinction right tackle, left tackle doesn't mean much at all anymore in the NFL. Most teams acknowledge that. Teams used to pay their left tackles a lot more money. They used to draft their potential left tackles a lot earlier. Now you need them both. Chris Brown had you can find it still, I'm sure, on our website, buffalobills.com, an excellent analysis of how that trend has changed in recent years and how teams have adapted to that change. Lili Phoenix tweets in, either obtain a good quarterback or lose quality players. We drafted other positions after contract time. I've had enough of option 2. Okay. I'm not sure I understand that. So obtaining a good quarterback means this year. They're not giving up on E.J. Manuel this year, folks. They're not. Jay Harris, your thoughts.
Well, I just want to – what positions are we looking at versus need and best player available? Outside of quarterback, maybe running back? If they were to draft – let me
– first-round running back?
Right. Outside of running back and quarterback. Name any other position. Is that
– maybe linebacker with Spikes and Alonzo. And
that may be the only reach. I mean, we're looking at, you know, cornerbacks.
Maybe a corner.
Yeah. You know, I just,
that's the kind of thing where the pick of a, I would say the pick of a running back, a corner, or a inside linebacker would probably be a best available player pick.
Those would be your
in the first round,
yes,
or second.
Okay,
you agree?
Yes.
You got a problem with that, or
no? I'm just trying to figure out,
trying to narrow it down.
Down.
I got
right.
you. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's true. I think drafting a corner, an inside linebacker, run stuffing linebacker, And there's some decent ones early on in this draft, maybe not nine overall, but decent ones. And a running back, and there probably is not a first-round running back in this draft. I think that would be a best available player pick. That I don't think it would go over among the fan base, and nor should it. I think it would not hit any needs, really, the Bills have, and I don't think it would make them a better team this year. They have to find a way to be a better team this year and not go way down their draft board to do it. I mean, that's really what the task is going into the draft. We'll talk more about this, and we'll get more phone calls on the air. We can talk about the Bills' draft strategy, NFL draft strategy. The phone line's open, 803-0550. You can reach us toll-free at 1-888-550-2550. You can also reach us via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A couple of notes from around the league. The Cleveland Browns, desperately in need of a quarterback. Reports out there today that they may have settled on Derek Carr from Fresno State as their quarterback. They still need veteran quarterback help, and the Browns are going to bring in Vince Young and Tyler Thigpen, a couple of former Buffalo Bills, for workouts at a minicamp that starts tomorrow. Vince Young did not play last year. They want to see what he's got left. Tyler Thigpen played in 29 games and six seasons in the NFL, including a couple of appearances with the Buffalo Bills. Vince Young last played in the NFL for the Eagles in 2011. Thigpen played in four games with the Bills in 2012. So those two are going to get a shot to see if they can be the veteran backup in Cleveland. Big contract for Earl Thomas, the safety for Seattle. He is just about ready to become the NFL's first $10 million a year safety. Thomas and the Seahawks agreed to a four-year contract extension worth $40 million, according to ESPN. It makes him the highest-paid safety in terms of average salary. It includes a 27.75 guarantee, according to ESPN. Earl Thomas, fourth season in the league with the Seahawks, 24 years old, three-time Pro Bowler. You recall, Jarris Byrd signed a six-year $54 million deal with New Orleans when free agency opened in March. And so he averaged $9 million per year. Jarris Byrd's contract is surpassed by Earl Thomas. Jarris Byrd's contract included $28 million in guaranteed money, slightly more than Earl Thomas is going to make. Troy Polamalu had the highest average salary of any safety prior to Earl Thomas' deal at $9.9 million. So it's interesting to compare. Jarris Byrd gets $9 million a year, 6 years, $54 million with 28 guaranteed. Earl Thomas gets 4 years, $40 million with 27.75 million guaranteed. Byrd's in the ballpark, one of the top paid safeties in the league. Seattle has one of the best safeties in the league in Earl Thomas. I think Jarris Byrd, both money-wise and ability-wise and performance-wise, would have to take a seat behind Earl Thomas in that regard. Michael Vick getting set to compete for the quarterback job with the New York Jets. The Philadelphia Eagles running back LeSean McCoy says Michael Vick should be the starter in New York. LeSean McCoy told the New York Post, quote, he's going to be the Jets starting quarterback. He's way better than Geno Smith, way better. There's no contest. Isn't that interesting? Such a candor from LeSean McCoy. Vick was signed to bring in competition for Geno Smith and a veteran leadership presence in the Jets locker room. And one of his former teammates says he's way better than Geno Smith. Michael Vick is going to wear number 8 with the Jets. Geno Smith will stay with his number 7. Michael Vick says he will change his number. He says he was not interested in taking number 7 from Geno Smith. Michael Vick will wear number 8 instead of number 7 with the New York Jets. That's going to be fun to watch this year to see how that plays out. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we come back. We're going to talk with Kevin Elliott, Bills wide receiver. He suffered a severely injured knee in the preseason game against Minnesota last year, fighting his way back to try to get back onto the roster for the Buffalo Bills and be a contributor in what is a crowded field at wide receiver. Kevin Elliott, when we return, it is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive, this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
John Murphy Show presented by NOCO as we await the NFL draft 10 days away. And while all this is going on, also here at One Bills Drive, Bills veterans have been here now in the second week of their voluntary offseason conditioning program. And among those here for some important offseason conditioning is our next guest, wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills, Kevin Elliott. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for coming on the air with us tonight. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Yeah, we've heard your name come up a lot over the last week or two. In particular, your teammate E.J. Manuel mentioned to us on the radio show last week that you were among the group that worked out with him and about a half dozen other guys down in Florida a couple weeks ago, huh?
Oh, yes, sir, man. We all got together. You know, we had a chance to you know, just run routes and, you know, get together and talk outside of football and, you know, get that chemistry going on a little earlier.
Well, Kevin, as I look at it and you look at the roster, and even before the draft, of the 75 on the roster, by my count, there were about one dozen, just about 12 receivers on the roster. That kind of makes, I would think, for a pretty crowded receivers room these days, huh?
Oh, yeah, definitely. We don't have any more seats available, so.
We better make note. Yeah, you better let people know that before the draft. No more seats in the room.
Exactly.
But tell me about that. And I was looking at the receiving roster and some of the guys in there. And, you know, obviously there's various sizes and shapes of different receivers. But you are among a group of very big wide receivers. I mean, they got you listed at 6'3", 205. But, man, you look down that list. Chris Summers, 6'5", Cordell Roberson, 6'4", Brandon Kaufman, who may be running with the tight ends now anyway, 6'5". There's some big wide receivers on this roster, including you right now, right?
Oh, yes, sir. They definitely pushed to get bigger receivers this year. And, you know, that was a team that that was a focal point that I think we needed. And, you know, I'm just ready to come and play my role. If that's my role, then I love to play that role as a big receiver.
I didn't even mention Ramsey Barden, who's 6'6", and Marcus Easley, 6'2", and got all that special teams work. You need big guys, right? Big receivers are at a premium now in the NFL. It's just the way the game has evolved, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's good to have balance. Obviously, we got speed guys and T.J. Graham and Marquise Goodwin. And, you know, Stevie and Robert, they're pretty good size as well. And, you know, it's always good to have a big receiver to complement all the other receivers as well.
Kevin Elliott, our guest, Bills wide receiver, is working out at the voluntary offseason conditioning program and trying to come back from a pretty serious knee injury. I recall the injury, Kevin. It was against Minnesota, second preseason game last August, and there was no contact involved, right? What happened that day, that game?
Yeah, I was just running down on kickoff, and I planted to cut across my man's face, and my knee just buckled on me. Like, I knew as soon as it happened. So I was pretty bummed that day. I was more furious than hurt at the time. But, you know, I settled down and became one with the fact, you know, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, I just put a lot of time into getting back right, getting back to normal.
Almost immediately they put you on injured reserve. What was last year, last fall, like for you then when you were on IR? Did you stay here in Buffalo and work out? Did you go home to Florida? What did you do?
Yeah, I had my surgery down in Miami, Florida, and I stayed down there the whole season. Besides the last four games of the season, I came back to Buffalo. But it was real tough, man, watching football for a whole year and not being able to be out there with my teammates and, you know, just have fun and just compete with them. So it was real tough, and I can tell you this, I got a lot of emotion, a lot of anger built up for 1 year just watching football that I can't wait to let out on the field this year.
Who you angry at?
I'm not so much angry at anybody, but, you know, it's just a lot of things built up just watching football and not being able to play.
Was that really your first serious injury, Kevin, in your football career?
No, I tore my – I dislocated my elbow – and my senior year in high school, that was pretty serious. But other than that, then, yeah, that was my most serious one.
We're on the line with Kevin Elliott, Bills wide receiver. I read a quote, Kevin, where you told someone that being out all last year and being on your reserve, as angry as you might have been, gave you a chance to maybe reassess, you know, what your body could do and what you wanted to do with your body moving forward. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely, man. I learned a lot about my body. I learned a lot about how the body works. And, you know, I got a chance to actually rebuild my legs from the ground up, both of them, and, you know, just get them stronger and work on different focal points that I felt like I was weak at as far as my hips and my hamstrings. So I definitely got a chance to get to know my body, and I definitely feel a lot faster than, or I will be a lot faster than I was before I tore my ACL last year.
You mentioned how you were throwing with E.J. Manuel, but I also read, did you rebuild your knees in the same, like, rehab center where E.J. was in Florida during this offseason?
Yes, sir. We both work out at Bomarito's Performance Center down in Miami, and every Tuesday and Thursday we would get together and just run routes, you know, get to know each other on and off the field and getting that chemistry down. So it was definitely a blessing in disguise.
What is your take on EJ? You know, even tonight on the show, people aren't sold on him, some of the fan base, Kevin. What do you think about EJ as he approaches this second year?
I mean, you can't you can't teach effort and hard work. And he's definitely focusing on the little things right now, and he wants to get better. That's the thing that, you know, I think we're all happy with him. And, you know, that was his rookie year, and I believe he'll definitely be a lot more confident, and he'll settle down this year, and we have a really good year.
Kevin Elliott, our guest, Bills wide receiver, as he comes back from a serious knee injury a year ago, came on to the NFL out of Florida A&M University and had some great production there, not just on offense, but you were pretty much a special teams standout at Florida A&M, weren't you, Kevin?
Yes, sir. You know, I got a little defensive side to me, and the coaches really wanted me to take me off kickoff, but I love running down there and, you know, making plays for my team, so they kept me on there, and I took pride in, you know, being the first one down and disrupting a lot of plays other teams were trying to run.
And that's what you were doing when you got hurt here last August, I guess, too, right?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Kevin, what you had the 1 year you went as an undrafted free agent with Jacksonville and actually played, most of the season coming out of college, right, in your first year in the NFL, 2012. You caught 10 passes that 1 year, right?
Yes, sir. I started every game on special teams and also got a chance to play receiver as well. And definitely played a lot more than a lot of people expect, especially my first year.
What did you learn from that you bring now to trying to win a roster spot here with the Buffalo Bills?
That this league is definitely a business, and that's how you got to approach it. I took every day, my mindset is every day I have to make a play or do something to have the coaches believe that I deserve to be on this team. And that's been my mindset since I left Jacksonville. And I believe that's going to carry me for many more years in the NFL.
Kevin, that period last year when you were hurt and rehabbing the knee, did you have much contact with the Bills, either coaches or players? I mean, did they check in on you, see how the rehab was going?
Yes, sir, most definitely. I mean, just us, the receivers, we have a group chat with each other. So we talk to each other every day. And, you know, Coach Marrone and the receiver coach, they would call me a lot of times. And, you know, that was very humbling to hear the coaches, you know, want to see me get better. And especially when they put me IR, that just gave me more motivation as to add a fuel to the fire.
So now you come back, you've been here for a week or so, going through the voluntary off-season conditioning. How does your knee feel, and how have you been keeping busy here at the complex in the mornings when you guys are here?
Oh, the knee feels real stable right now, and I believe I'm in the phase at where I'm trying to get my strength back to where it was. And the coaches with their weight training program right now is definitely helping me out. And, you know, we've been putting in a lot of good work and actually just been, you know, just hanging around, just getting the feel, man. It feels good to be back around my teammates. It feels good to be back in the Bills facility around actual football instead of just doing rehab every day.
Yeah, and you guys, I guess you don't do football plays or drills. It's mostly conditioning work. But you do spend time in the classroom, right, in the time that you're here in the mornings?
Yes, sir. We have meetings every day for about an hour and a half.
And it's a new receiving coach. Tell me what your impressions are of Rob Moore replacing Ike Hilliard as a receivers coach.
Yeah, you can tell he has a lot of insight on the game because he's actually played receiver in the NFL. So he has a lot of wisdom that, you know, we're all listening and taking in. And he seems like, you know, he's just ready to go. He's ready to change the team around and make us better, and we're all in. Anything that has to do with getting us better, you know, we're locked in and we're ready to go.
Hey, Kevin, I can tell over the last couple of months that you have people rooting for you in the organization, teammates, coaches. Why do you think that is? People mention your name as someone, you know, don't overlook Kevin Elliott. Don't go to sleep on Kevin Elliott. Why do you think that is?
I mean, I believe hard work doesn't go unnoticed, and that's what I built my brand on, my body on, and I'm not shying away from hard work. And, you know, you can't teach effort, and that's something I take pride in. And, you know, I guess the coaches and the players see that. You know, I just want to do anything I can to help the team, and as far as me getting on the field, I believe I'll definitely help this team out.
Will you watch the draft next week, and will you, you know, lose any sleep over who the Bills pick if they happen to choose a big wide receiver in the draft next week?
Not at all. I can't control that. You know, I'm worried about what I can control, and whoever they pick is going to have to strap up the cleats and outwork me.
Well, Kevin, we wish you a lot of luck on that, and we'll see you around the building here. Thank you very much for coming on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man.
Okay, Kevin Elliott, Bills wide receiver, a product of Florida A&M. He had the 1 year where he played quite a bit. Special teams, he said, with the Jacksonville Jaguars, and Bills signed him late in 2012. I think they wanted to get a good look at him last summer in camp, and then he got hurt in the second preseason game against the Vikings, spent the entire year on injury reserve. Healthy again, you heard him say that, and ready to resume his quest for a roster spot. 12 receivers on the Buffalo roster right now before the draft. That seems like a lot. Some of them with very good size. Kevin Elliott among that group, good size wide receivers, but Ramsey's Barden, 6'6". He's got NFL experience. Chris Summers, a first-year man, 6'5". Marcus Easley, you know about him, going into his fourth year at 6'2". There's some good-sized wide receivers on this Bills roster. Kevin Elliott stands alongside them. And you know, Cordell Roberson, another first-year guy, 6'4". Kevin Elliott, as we said, 6'3". Mike Williams, 6'2". Some good-sized wide receivers trying to win jobs, and who knows what they come out of the draft with when it comes to receivers as well. We'll take a break, come back to more, and you can phone in your comments on that interview or anything else about the Bills, the draft, the NFL. We were talking earlier about drafting for need as opposed to best available. Which way do you go? And does anybody really draft best available player? 803-0550, the number, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. It's the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Tonight, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hard not to root for a guy like Kevin Elliott, isn't it, when you hear him and hear about his comeback attempt from the serious knee injury? I find it hard not to root for a guy like that. We wish him well. As he said, there's no seats left in the receiver's room. Are they going to draft a receiver? They'll find a way. Let's go to Jonah in Cranberry Lake, New York. Hi, Jonah. How are you tonight?
How are you?
Great.
I was wondering, if the Bills do go ahead and draft a wide receiver in, say, the first round, who do you think will end up being the receivers playing for the Bills next year, and who will get cut?
Well, I don't know about cuts yet because there's a long way to go before that. But so if they get a first-round receiver, you'd have to believe it's going to be either Mike Evans or Sammy Watkins.
Yeah.
Unless they – I mean, they could move down, I guess, and get, you know, somebody else. But I think if they stay at number nine, let me put it that way. Well, first of all, if they stay at number nine, they're not going to get Sammy Watkins. So if they make a move to move up, they could probably have a crack at Sammy Watkins. If they stay at number nine, they would probably have a crack. Probably, may, not guaranteed, but probably have a crack anyway at Mike Evans. Other than that, Odell Beckham is first-round talent at receiver. He is not big, you know, a little bit under 6 foot. Brandon Cooks, shorter receiver. I don't think they'd be interested in him or Marquise Lee. Jordan Matthews, second rounder, probably. Kelvin Benjamin, second rounder. So if they do draft a wide receiver in the first round, I think it'd either be Mike Evans, maybe a long shot Sammy Watkins if they want to make the big move up, and they have to move up pretty high, maybe to as high as 3, 4, maybe 5 if Cleveland uses its first rounder on a quarterback. I mean, that could change things, really, Jonah and everybody. If Cleveland, as has been talked about in some quarters tonight, if Cleveland is really interested in Derek Carr as their quarterback, and if they're going to use that fourth pick to get Derek Carr, then that's good for the Bills. So any quarterback drafted in the ahead of the Bills is good for the Bills, I think, to push people down. Some people don't think there will be any quarterbacks in those top eight. I think somebody will. Somebody will go for a quarterback. Cleveland has a desperate need for a quarterback. Jacksonville needs a quarterback. Who knows what Oakland needs. So I think somebody will go for a quarterback in that first eight. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Manziel in that first eight. But at any rate, any quarterback that goes in that first eight, I think, is a boost for the Bills getting the type of player that they want, whether it is Mike Evans, the receiver, or you know, maybe the tight end Eric Ebron, or maybe one of those three tackles. I think that's how it will play out for the Bills. We'll see. I mean, they may have a move up their sleeve as well. We're going to talk a lot more about the draft when we come back, including a way that you can get an eye on some of these prospects instead of reading Mel Kiper or Our Lads or Todd McShay or Mike Mayock. Why not do your own scouting? There's a way to do it on a website called draftbreakdown.com. The founder of that website is going to join us when we come back. Aaron Aloysius is his name. We'll talk to him about his evaluation of the draft and about putting that website together. We're going to talk with an agent at 8:30, an agent who also writes for National Football Post, Jack Bechta, who represents several NFL players. Says mock drafts, big problems with those. We'll talk with him next hour as well. Stick around. One more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO this Monday night. We are live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Time is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
You can't stop C.J. Spiller. You can't stop him. How did he do it? How did he do it?
Let's go sometime.
There he is. Hold on. Let's go. Check it out.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, supplying natural gas and electricity to thousands of homes and businesses across Western New York.
Everybody's on their feet in the stands. This crowd has absolutely whipped into a frenzy.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Hour two of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We come to you 10 days before the NFL draft. Just 10 more days of pre-draft coverage. Can you handle 10 more days? We can. We got a lot to talk about, including with our next guest. Speaking of the draft, if you'd like to see more on the draft or hear more on the draft, go to BuffaloBills.com, and you can find Chris Brown and I with our draft previews, our video pieces. Khalil Mack is up today, the UB product preview that I did. Tomorrow, Chris Brown will take a look at Calvin Benjamin, the Florida State wide receiver. And we have all of them archived, and we'll do it right up until the first day of the draft, 10 days away, a way to hear from some of the draft prospects and sound that we gather from the combine and see some of their highlight video as well. Speaking of highlight video of the draft, this is something that came up the other day. There's no shortage of draft expertise out there. You know the names, Mel Kiper, Todd McShay, Mike Mayock, blah, 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 blah. We've had a lot of them on the show tonight. Why not make up your own mind? Why not take a look at some of the video from some of the draft prospects that you've heard about? Why take it from a draft magazine or from Mel Kiper or from our lads? Make up your own mind. Well, there's a website out there that lets you do that. It's called draftbreakdown.com. We talked about it on the show the other night. Joining us on the line right now, the founder and I believe the creator of draftbreakdown.com, Aaron Aloysius. Hi, Aaron. Thanks for being on with us tonight.
Thanks.
It's good to have you. This is your idea. This is your website. How long has Draft Breakdown been around, Aaron?
Well, it's been around since 2008. In 2010, I kind of got more actively involved, and we imported the video concept to the site. And it's really grown. It's gone from that year where we were happy if we just had a video of each first-round pick to now for this class, we have videos of over 450 different prospects.
Wow. You know, when I first heard about it at the Senior Bowl, I think you may have tweeted about it or said we had Jordan Matthews, the big receiver from Vanderbilt, on the show, and I said, well, how did you watch these corners that you're facing in the Senior Bowl? And he said, well, I go to this website, draftbreakdown.com. Did you ever hear that, or did we tell you that already, Aaron?
Yeah, that was tremendous. We're wishing him well. Eric Fisher actually was the trailblazer on that front the previous year. He used it to scout some of the pass rushers he faced down the Senior Bowl. And obviously that turned out pretty well for him. So we're hoping that Matthews also has a good draft weekend so that we can claim that those guys got a draft breakdown bump.
There you go. Aaron Aloysius is our guest. How do we identify you, Aaron? Are you the founder or a writer or the editor of draftbreakdown.com?
I guess you could identify me as the co-president along with Will Spencer.
Co-president.
And, he's kind of the webmaster / godfather of the site, where I'm more involved with the video intricacies of it all.
Yeah, well, it really comes in handy. Explain for people how the website, what's valuable about the website, maybe what sets apart draftbreakdown.com from all of the other resources that NFL fans and draft fans might be looking at these days.
Well, you did a great job of explaining it. I was fortunate to have a lot of great teachers growing up, especially, English teachers who would tell me to show, not tell. And perhaps I took that too literally, where we built this draft site around the idea that we're able to show you what to look for. You don't have to listen to us just, declare X prospect has certain traits, Y prospect has others. You can look at the tape and evaluate for yourself. And also, through the scouting report links on our player pages, you can go see some of the reports from some of the great draft sites around the web and kind of compare your evaluations to the ones that other great analysts have formed.
I'm looking, for instance, right now at Johnny Manziel's page on draftbreakdown.com. You have 10 games from this year. It looks like 4 or 5 games from the year before. Is that like a typical representative sample of the number of games you would have for each prospect, Aaron?
There tend to be a lot for the quarterbacks, and those tend to be very appealing to our users. And we're fortunate that one of the big things is that we've been able to build a multiple-year archive where you can look at those videos from 2012 and kind of ascertain where has Mansell improved, what does he still need to improve upon. And it's especially valuable for prospects who may have had a down year in 2013, talking about players like Will Sutton, perhaps, or out of Arizona State, the defensive tackle, or Dante Moncrief, the Ole Miss wide receiver, where sometimes there are issues out of their control, and you can look back at the 2012 tape to kind of get a picture of what their true upside is as a prospect.
It should be noted, Aaron, that your video is not, you know, all 22 coaches' video, right? It's television video for the most part.
Yeah, on occasion we are able to use all 22 film. In fact, this week I'll be putting out some all 22 videos of Joe Don Duncan, the small school Dixie State tight end, who will be working out for teams later this week. But much of it is indeed broadcast tape.
And how do you collect all that? How do you get all that, aggregate all that, and put it up on the website?
Well, thankfully, my DVR is my best friend. And there are a number of other various resources, and specifically referring to, like, when we use all 22 tape, a lot of schools are very helpful with that, and we appreciate it because we're really trying to help promote some of these players and help people who, for instance, I doubt many people, even those diehard draft picks, were spending, you know, 18 hours in the fall watching Eastern Illinois to get a good picture of Jimmy Garoppolo. But fortunately, right now, if you go to the site, you can find, I believe, 6 videos from his fall campaign and kind of and evaluate for yourself those strengths and weaknesses that you'll find in reports noted around the web.
Aaron, how long have you been interested in the NFL draft?
Well, my passion for the draft is born out of being a long-suffering Browns fan. It seemed like always the springtime was the most exciting time of the year for us. In the fall, you know, late fall, winter, you'd have those miserable cold weather games. I'm sure many Bills fans share that sentiment, and yeah, sometimes the outcome wasn't much better. But fortunately, both teams seem to be on the upswing, I believe, and also draft breakdown has been born out of that passion.
So you've been following the draft for a while. Where did you get the idea to start putting video up, and what drove that to kind of get to collect all the video and put it up for fans?
Yeah, I think much of it was recognition that there already is so much great work out there done by draft analysts, including some guys, you know, who were formerly in the NFL. So it was kind of where could we add extra value to the draft community? Where could we help make sure that we as a community are better informed and there's more insight as opposed to just, you know, merely repetition of what's been put out in the scouting report? So it grew out of that. And fortunately, like I said, we started out pretty small, but so many people appreciated the service that they, in a sense, wanted to pay it forward. So they got involved as well. And now we have a dedicated crew of 15 video editors who are, you know, at this almost you know, entire year long, working to produce more and more videos for the site.
Yeah, and tell folks listening tonight, Aaron, how user friendly the video is. So, for instance, if you want to watch like a offensive lineman, tell them how you set it up so you can watch that.
Well, typically, especially when you have players that move around a lot, like a linebacker or who may put his hand in the dirt on third down. So we try to add annotation boxes highlighting them before the snap. Some of the videos will actually have a freeze frame before the snap to help make it even easier to identify which player is being evaluated in that clip. And it just enhances the process where, especially, let's say you're dealing with some grainy all-22 tape, you know, it's not always too easy to figure out, is that the tight end I'm supposed to be looking at, or is that his backup? So we do the best job we can to try to make it, as you said, as user-friendly as possible.
Aaron Aloysius is our guest. He is the co-president of DraftBreakdown.com, a website that will come in handy to Bills fans, any NFL fans who want to get ready for the draft in 10 days. Aaron, are casual fans or even pretty deeply involved fans, are they qualified to look at video and make observations on draft prospects?
Well, I think a lot of the learning experience involved comes with spending as much time as you can watching the videos or watching full games if you can, and comparing your notes to the notes of, you know, of experts that you can find, for instance, linked to on our scouting reports page. I think there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of guess and check. There's a lot of trying to trust your own eyes and form your own evaluations. And I do think, you know, through that process, you can become a more informed fan, more informed evaluator. And I know some people even who have aspirations to pursue a professional career in scouting will go to the art site and use that as kind of the beginning of their path.
Yeah, I think you're right about that, Aaron. In fact, I'd liken it to when NFL.com made all 22 coaches video available a couple of years ago. What a great resource that was for fans. Not that fans can look at it and you know, pretend to coach teams or make evaluations on players, but at least they can share maybe, you know, the look of what went on, and you can have a second look at what went on from a coach's vantage point. Not that you're going to be as qualified as a coach or, in your case, as qualified as a scout, but it helps to at least have some shared information to start with as opposed to secondhand reports, correct?
Yeah, and I firmly believe we are entering kind of a renaissance of football talk and football analysis online with all the resources available, and I'm very pleased that Draft Breakdown can be just a little part of that.
Aaron, how do you, I'm reluctant to ask this question because I don't want to kill what is a golden goose for fans, but how do you guys make money on DraftBreakdown.com?
We're primarily ad revenue based, so thankfully this draft season has been very kind to us on the traffic front. We've tripled our traffic from last year. So basically, if you want to support the site, please continue visiting it, and also please consider using the embed tool. We have a share this video button below our videos. If you take one of those and pop it on your website, that helps promote us more. So we appreciate all the people around the draft world and also the media world who have begun using that tool.
Because I would imagine you guys have thought through the fact that you might be able to charge a subscription for this service, right?
Yes, but we're appreciative just that so many people are using it right now, and we hope that number will just continue to grow.
You mentioned traffic. Can you tell us, maybe since this year's draft cycle began, is there one player or maybe a couple of players who have generated the most video traffic on draftbreakdown.com, Aaron?
Yeah, I was just looking over the numbers recently, and one interesting name that popped up is Cody Latimer, the Indiana wide receiver who declared early and just recently had his delayed pro day for scouts, and he actually performed rather well. Personally, when I first put up a video of him soon after he declared, and I never got a more forceful, more pleased response from people on Twitter than when I posted that video. It's really a testament to how talented he is. And as a consequence, if people note that he ran a 40, some had him timed in the high 4.3s, some in the low 4.4s, as if they find out that information and then they're checking our site to see what we have on him, they're coming away even more impressed and kind of spreading the word on this very intriguing potential second-round prospect.
Huh. What does that tell you, that maybe the website is best used for the guys who haven't had, you know, big reputations, big names, and maybe it's better used for maybe the under-the-radar type prospects?
I think part of it is that, and also just that that the traffic tends to follow talent. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that, you know, for prospects that our team tends to like, we end up having more videos of them. And in the same vein, prospects that are very appealing and have tremendous talent tend to draw a lot of traffic. So while we do spend a lot of time trying to showcase those small schoolers like Jimmy Garoppolo, it tends to be the case that wherever the player comes from, if he's talented, people will find him on the site and they'll promote his videos.
Hey, Aaron, who are the most impressive prospects in the draft that's coming up in 10 days?
I think, well, you have to start with Jadeveon Clowney. I think the video we have up of him versus Tennessee that has, you know, two quality tackles, including Antonio Richardson on the left side, where Clowney kind of, he just put together a wow performance. There was some backstory there, where the previous year, Richardson thought he'd kind of gotten the upper hand against Clowney. So Clowney came around for revenge in that game, and our cut-up shows the tremendous burst, especially with an inside move that Clowney can display, and also the competitiveness that he shows, where I know there's a lot of talk questions about his motor, questions about his effort, but this is a player who is oftentimes double-teamed or the entire game plan would be running away from him, especially in the run game. So the effort he shows, especially when he kind of senses blood in the water, it's really impressive, and it's why he's currently under consideration for that number one overall pick.
Hmm. Are there any quarterbacks? Who's your favorite quarterback in this year's draft class?
My favorite quarterback would have to be, despite all the current discussion, whether he's dropping or not, would have to be Teddy Bridgewater. I think it's interesting, if you were to ask a year ago at this time, would people prefer Bridgewater or E.J. Manuel, who is a very good prospect in his own right? I think you get a lot of media analysts who would have said they prefer Bridgewater. Nevertheless, at this point, we're talking about him potentially falling out of the first round entirely, which I can kind of understand in terms of questions about, you know, his hand size or his build. A lot of analysts would want to point to Russell Wilson as an example of a quarterback who didn't have all the ideal traits, who's turned into a phenomenon. But whereas media analysts may be quicker to kind of transform their thinking, NFL scouts or GMs whose jobs are on the line, they may not reinvent the wheel so quickly. So it's understandable, I think, from that perspective, why they may be have a little bit stronger reservations than media analyst types do. But I still firmly believe that he'll be a quality NFL starter. If I were looking for a quarterback in this draft, he'd be the first guy I'd target.
Last question, Aaron. How far have we come in draft analysis? There's more of it than there ever has been, and this year we have a couple of extra weeks of it. In general, though, are NFL fans, football fans, more educated now about these prospects than they were, say, 10, 20 years ago because of websites like yours, or is it all just noise? Is it all just clutter out there?
I definitely think that it's easier to form a full evaluation of a player nowadays. I mean, I remember a couple years ago with Aaron Curry, where the only video available on YouTube was just a collection of highlight reels. And even with his workout numbers at the combine, I believe
Hello, Aaron.
You really have to dig deep.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Aaron.
Oh, yeah. So
you're saying about Aaron Curry.
Yes. So I think more information is available. And one of the great advances I think you'll find is with the analytics revolution, where you have a lot more stat-based analysis, quality stat-based analysis. In fact, on our player pages, we feature data from Mock Draftable, which looks at combine numbers and puts together comparisons to prospects from previous classes. So that kind of information, I think, is just very valuable, and you'll find it on other sites as well. Greg Peschek at RotoWorld has done a tremendous job, and it's part of that football renaissance that I referenced earlier.
Well, it's great work, Aaron. We appreciate you coming on the air with us tonight to talk about it. We continue to use the website. This all came about last week when this sounds crazy, but I woke up one day and thought, I need to see more of Eric Ebron. And where else would I go? I went to your website and saw more of Eric Ebron. So thanks for that.
Absolutely. It's very much appreciated.
Okay. Aaron Aloysius is co-president, the founder of DraftBreakdown.com, a place where you can go to see video of all the prospects, hundreds of them, right there at DraftBreakdown.com. It's a valuable resource. And really, why should you just let the draft gurus, the draft experts dictate what you know about these players? Right? I mean, I know that I'm not speaking to everyone here, because many of you do this, not through this website, but through other ways to look at the video. But you know, it's one thing to have as a resource the draft experts. I use Our Lad's Guide. Some people use Mike Mayock. Some people use Todd McShay, Daniel Jeremiah, Mel Kiper Jr. All of them, they're good. We use Kevin Weidel a lot on this show. But why not see for yourself what you're looking at? And if you see one of those draft experts make reference to a particular characteristic of a player, don't you want to see it for yourself? I do. That's why I like the website, draftbreakdown.com. We thank Aaron Aloysius for joining us. The draft on the tip of our tongues here for the next week and a half. And the Bills and M&T Bank continue on with this year's Predict the Picks draft contest. It is going on right now, and it runs through May 7th, so just about a little bit more than a week left to go. Fans can enter the contest at buffalobills.com and try to predict the picks. You're going to be asked a series of 10 multiple-choice questions specific to the Bills' 2014 draft. 50 fans who answer at least half the questions correctly get an official 2014 Bills draft cap by New Era Cap. So go online right now, buffalobills.com/predictthepicks. The Bills and M&T Bank with the Predict the Picks draft contest going on right now. One entry form is, once it's completed and submitted, you'll get a copy of your answer so you can track your progress while you follow the draft. And the overall winner, the number one winner, is going to get an exclusive meet and greet with the Bills' first draft pick this year. Predict the Picks. It's up right now at buffalobills.com/predictthepicks, sponsored by the Bills and M&T Bank. A lot of draft talk. I had a chance over the weekend to speak at a gathering on Saturday morning with a couple of UB Bulls who hope to be drafted in the upcoming draft. Running back Brandon Oliver, we had him on the show a couple of weeks ago, record-setting running back for the UB Bulls. Wide receiver Alex Newts, the Grand Island product. Both of them hoping that they hear their names called, acknowledging that they might not, and both of whom are going to wind up in a training camp with somebody, you would think, after the draft. Well, Doug Majewski is the Bills' coordinator of college scouting, and I had a chance to ask Doug Majewski last week at the Bills' draft luncheon about those two, running back Brandon Oliver and receiver Alex Newts, and maybe their draft prospects 10 days away from the draft.
Bo Oliver, you know, he's a shorter, but he's thick, strong, fast running back that had good production. He's a good blocker for a smaller statured guy, smaller height guy. Newts had, you know, really good production as a pass catcher. He's got good ball skills. You know, he ran pretty much what everybody expected him to run. He's not a 4.4 blazer guy, but he's got good speed. He's got good athletic ability. He can get open.
So those two, a couple of names to watch in the third day of the draft, Brandon Oliver from UB and Alex Newts from Grand Island and the University of Buffalo. Of course, their teammate, Khalil Mack, going to be one of the top picks, probably one of the top three picks in 10 days in the first round of the draft. All right, we'll take a break. And when we come back, one man's view of mock drafts. He says there's a lot of problems with mock drafts, and they lack a lot. The man who writes that is Jack Bechta. He is a long time, I'm talking about, three-decade NFL agent, represents all kinds of talent in the NFL. He wrote an article for National Football Post about what mock drafts lack as we are deep into the mock draft season right now. Jack Bechta, the agent, when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Tonight we're live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
On the air tonight, 10 days before the first round of the NFL draft, talking a lot about the draft. Series of good articles on nationalfootballpost.com in recent weeks about the draft, and several of them written by our next guest. He is a longtime NFL agent, 30 years or more. He represents 20 active NFL players, and he is a columnist for nationalfootballpost.com. Jack Bechta on the line with us from California. Jack, thank you for being on the air with us tonight. We appreciate it.
How you doing, Murph?
I'm doing great. Among your players, as a guy, before we get to some of the columns that you've written, is Tony Moiaki, Bills tight end. A lot of people here are excited to see what Tony Moiaki might have to contribute to the Buffalo Bills offense this year, Jack.
Yeah, the Bills might get credit for one of the more sneakier moves during street free agency, if you will, than anybody in the league. You know, Tony was a rising star his rookie year. Got injured, tore his ACL second year, third year, had another spectacular, you know, year kind of coming off an injury. Was, you know, hurt a little bit, but still managed to have a very productive year. And then last year, he fractured his scapula in a really bizarre play. And so, you know, it was no soft tissue damage, just a fracture, and just kind of had to sit on the sidelines. And when he hit the streets, I had a lot of teams inquiring about him, and including the Patriots and several others, but the Bills kind of stepped up and said, hey, we don't only want them the rest of this year, we want them next year. And originally I was reluctant to do anything on 2014, but they really stepped up to the plate and painted a picture of how he could fit in and were very aggressive. And you have a starting type quality tight end there, and I saw they signed Chandler back, so that's a position I know a lot of people are talking about. Ebron coming too, but there's more depth there than meets the eye.
That's the kind of acquisition you have to make when you're where the Bills have been for a long time now, isn't it, Jack?
Yeah, I think you fill your need in free agency any time of the year, 12 months out of the year, 52 weeks out of the year. If there's a guy on the street who can help your team, you always have to look at your team as a snapshot in time and not hope and not have the plan that you hope you get a great player in the draft, because the draft is not a given. It's not a certain. It takes time for guys to develop. So that being said, the Bills made a very cerebral move there.
We're on the line with NFL agent Jack Bechta, who also writes columns for National Football Post. Hey, Jack, I have a friend who works for another NFL team who, about a week or so after the draft every year, the last several years, will send me an email listing the last mock drafts for some of the big-name draft prognosticators, demonstrating how wrong they were in their mock drafts. You wrote a column on National Football Post, What Mock Drafts Lack. It is a very inexact science, isn't it?
That's an inexact science, and the draft nicks who are, and even give like maybe the top three, four, or five who actually get access to college game tape and go to the Senior Bowl and go to the East-West game and are, boots on the ground at the combine and maybe get a chance to interact with players and the agents. Even those guys don't get the big picture. They don't get the medical reports. They don't get the character reports. They get third, fourth-party hearsay. But if I'm the Buffalo Bills or the Seattle Seahawks, and if I have intel on a guy that makes him special or not so special, and if it's on the medical, if it's on the character, it's on the football IQ or the intelligence, I'm not sharing that with anybody, a reporter, a draft nick, no one. That stays in-house. That's going to give me, the regional scout or the director of scouting, a leg up on everybody else, and that's the name of the game.
The medical reports are critical, aren't they? And it makes sense that they wouldn't be shared with everybody, but that really might be one of the most important pieces of any draft evaluation.
It is the most important piece. I mean, if you go buy a car, nobody really pays full price for something that had, a previous accident, or I can't remember what the term is, but, has a previous damage certificate to it. So same goes with players. I mean, a lot of players come out of college beat up, and different universities, work their players differently, and there are some that are more beat up than others. So having the medical and really evaluating, how long this player can play, does he have degenerative issues in the knees or the neck or the back or the spine? These things are really important, and teams are loaded with this information, and they're separators as well, because, one team may have a guy just, hey, he's good, he's healthy, I don't have a concern with this past injury, and another team will, like the Ravens, for example, are very aggressive, and their doctors are aggressive, and the owner has given them kind of veto power, if you will, over not drafting and bringing guys in. So, yes, and again, that's information that teams don't have. I mean, I have a client named James Hurst who was rated as one of the top O tackles coming out, and he played 49 straight games and got hurt in his bowl game, the last game he would ever play in as a college game, and he fractured a bone. So he didn't get to play in the Senior Bowl, and he didn't get to perform at the combine. He barely got to do some things at his pro day. So a player like that, it's just a fracture, no soft tissue damage. 32 teams should have the same exact opinion on him, but they all may not. There's other players out there that had some tissue damage type issues, and one doctor on one team might say, nope, red flag him, I wouldn't bring him in here, and the other doctor might, I did this operation 30 times, every 29 of the guys turned out great, so I'll pass him.
The other thing that is not often, it seems, measured in mock drafts, Jack, is fit. You refer to it as football IQ and fit. And I was thinking about this in the Bills' terms. When they get Jerry Hughes, who obviously did not fit with what the Indianapolis Colts were doing a year ago, comes to Buffalo, and he's a perfect fit. That sometimes isn't even measured when it comes to mock drafts or predicting who's going to go where.
Yeah, without question. I had a player named Al Harris who played Green Bay Packers for many, many years and one of the best shutdown corners in the league. And, here's a guy, he was cut twice by Tampa, by Herm Edwards, by who else was there? Herm Edwards, Rich McKay, Jerry Angelo. There was a lot of guys had their fingerprints on him. And he goes up to originally Philadelphia and steps in for Troy Vincent, who was hurt, or Bobby Taylor, I can't remember who. And, has a 14-year career as the shutdown corner for the Packers for a long time. So, yeah, he didn't fit into the Tampa 2 because they didn't play aggressive press defense. But and that goes for a lot of the 3-4, 4-3 linebackers, rush DN, that's where you really start splitting hairs on where a player fits. So, you know, I've gone into the draft and I've had linebacker Pat Anger, who, you know, the 4-year starter for the Colts, second round pick. I've had 10 teams before the draft tell me they don't have him as high as a 6th, 7th, or free agent because he just didn't fit to their scheme and he gets drafted in the middle of the second round. So, you know, beauty's in the eye of the beholder, and I really think front offices are getting better and better and better at commingling their ideas with their coaching staff and their schemes, and they're starting to realize how important schemes are. Sometimes schemes, you know, like the offense in Green Bay or the defense in New England, have proven that they're just as important as coaching the players, and it's a component that has to be given consideration on draft day. And I think a lot of the draft picks don't, you know, really have the IQ to bring that in, you know, put that in.
We're on the line with Jack Becta, NFL agent. He also is a columnist for NationalFootballPost.com. Hey, Jack, a week or so ago you wrote about resetting the draft board. The Bills and most teams are now, I'm sure, finalizing their draft board. And what's your thought on how much, you know, what's left to be done, I guess? And do the area scouts, the guys who are out there in the field, have anything left to say in draft priorities as teams move towards the draft?
Well, I love the area scout. They've been following the player for 4 years, right? So if you keep going back to, you know, University of Buffalo or Penn State year after year, you see the evolution, the growth and development of a player. You see why he was maybe sitting or why he was starting or what coaches liked him or you know, how he was hurt and all that good stuff. So they have a more intimate knowledge of, you know, the players. And a lot of times these guys sit at home. They work out of their car in the hotel in their extra bedroom. And when they get into the office, and for the, you know, a guy like Pete Carroll, I understand, like, he really gives his area scouts a lot of latitude, as does John Schneider, because he was an area scout. He's the GM of the Seahawks. And these guys have a lot of say as to how the draft boards are set, and they have a lot of debate. So a lot of times they don't come back into the office till about one, two, or three weeks before the draft, depending on how the GM runs things. And when they get back in there, it's kind of a sobering experience. I mean, they have to have the guts and the bravado to stand up and you know, stand behind their opinion or have a debate. An argument, a debate with, you know, a coach. But that's where the GM comes back in, to being the great orchestrator of all the intel that comes into the room.
And, Jack, last question. Do agents, guys like you, have anything to do at this late stage with a guy getting noticed by a team, getting pushed up a draft board? Is that something that agents can influence?
A little bit. I think any agent says, I can get you moved up a round or two, I think he's lying. And I think that we definitely can massage and tweak an opinion. You know, in the case I had about my offensive tackle from North Carolina, you know, I have to give assurances that he is healthy, he is fine, he's moving around now, he's 100%, he's regained all his strength, he's as good as he was before his last game. So, you know, being in the business for 27 years, and growing up with a lot of the GMs in this business, they may trust what I tell them. I got a call from a AFC South team today. I won't mention who, but they wanted to kind of go over my players and ask me where I thought they would be drafted, because it's just something that we do every year, and we kind of debate. And they might like one or two of my players. They might not tell me exactly which one, but they want to kind of get an idea if another team's going to leapfrog them right before they're going to pick them. So, an agent can make a difference. There's times where myself or other agents have sent out films to GMs and just begged them, hey, watch this particular film against this particular player. If you haven't, you owe it to yourself and your team to do so. And sometimes that may make a difference. It might not be, you know, 32 or 64 slot different, but it might be, you know, the difference between a free agent and a 6th, 7th round pick. It might be a difference between a round. It might be the difference between, you know, trading up for a guy. You know, I once try to convince Ron Wolf to trade up for a speedy receiver named Tim DeWight out of Iowa. And, you know, a few years earlier, he made the Brett Favre trade, and no team wanted to make a trade for him or trade with Ron after that.
Yeah.
God. And he really wanted this kid, and, you know, Atlanta took him a few picks before.
Yeah. Hey, Jack, thank you very much. Really enjoy the work on NationalFootballPost.com, and thanks for spending a little time with us tonight. Thanks for the insight.
Yeah, good luck, and have fun during the draft. I hope the Bills do well.
Thanks. Jack Bechta, he is a longtime NFL agent. He's got 20 or more players in the league right now, and you can catch his work as a columnist occasionally on NationalFootballPost.com. Wrote a recent article about what mock drafts lack. He wrote about resetting the draft board. He wrote about myths in the draft. It's definitely worth checking out at NationalFootballPost.com. Our thanks to him. We're going to take a break. Come back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive tonight on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
So all of that mock draft stuff we've been talking to people about over the last few months doesn't mean a thing, according to Jack Bechta, agent and columnist for National Football Post. But he's right when you think about it. The medical reports, we don't have access to that, nor should we. The personal contact that, in many cases, that area scouts have with coaches and, you know, college coaches, high school coaches, family members, it's got to mean something to an evaluation. And which mock draft writer, which draftnik do you think has access to that? None of them, you would think? I mean, how could you? The area scouts have their own areas they work. And finally, this, and I've said this a couple times on the show, vastly underrated when it comes to prediction of success or failure in the NFL. The fit, the particular fit that a certain player has with a certain coaching staff or a certain system. Jerry Hughes, a sterling example of that. Jack Bechta had other examples. I think that is vastly underrated and something that maybe a team and a coaching staff would have to be involved in that. It's an inexact science, the NFL draft. There's no question about that. It's a lot of fun, the NFL draft. There's no question about that. But it's we don't know as much as we think we might know as to who's going to do what and who's going to fit where and what the best selection each team will be. And let's face it, teams miss as well. Bechta, in one of his columns, had this stat. The best drafting teams in the NFL hit on a player, however you define that, hit on a player 75% of the time. Most teams average about 50% a hit, which probably means a starter or a significant reserve. Anyway, your thoughts on that. Give us a call on that, 803-0550. The number, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. You can reach out and follow us on Twitter at John Murphy Show. Or your thoughts on draft strategy. Best player available, fill a need, what would you do? Here is John in Rochester. Hello, John, you're on the air.
And, you know, I got to say, Johnny Manziel, if the Bills were able to trade up for Johnny Manziel, maybe they wouldn't have to, but I think they may, this town would go wild. Buffalo would go wild. And
go wild or a bad way?
In a great way.
Really?
Like last year I went wild in a bad way when they drafted EJ number one. I wanted him two or three. But Manziel, he's so unique. One of the most unique players to come out of college in a long, long time.
In what way do you see him as unique?
Well, his charisma, number one. His attitude, number two. He's got eyes in the back of his head like Doug Flutie had, and he's bigger than Doug Flutie. And he's got a better arm than Doug Flutie. I just think the guy's a natural leader, and he's got the charisma that 95% of the players don't have at quarterback. And I just think we would sell out every game. There would be none of this lack of sellouts at the end of the season with this type of guy and this type of player. You know, but having said that, you know who would be a bigger mistake not to draft Manziel is Houston and Dallas. I mean, a Texas boy not getting drafted by his home state, that would be an injustice to Johnny Manziel. But, hey, if we can get him, let's get him.
All right, I disagree. I don't think he's that good. I don't think his game is going to translate to the NFL in a real positive way. I could be wrong on that. You could be right, but that's my opinion. I have a hard time justifying a draft pick for a guy by saying he's got charisma. There's a lot of guys walking around the street with charisma who can't play a lick in the NFL. I just disagree. I mean, I just don't think he's that special. I think he I referenced this a week or so ago. You could probably still find it online. Greg Cosell, very, very highly regarded writer for NFL.com and a variety of other websites, did sort of a breakdown on Johnny Manziel, what he does well, what he doesn't do well. And what it boils down to is he's an undersized guy who has made some plays at Texas A&M. You're going to need to either surround him like Russell Wilson with a very strong defense and a pretty good running game, or you're going to have to hope that he has the kind of moxie approach that Drew Brees has, because he is similar in stature to those two, similar, I think, in terms of arm talent to those two. And arm talent means something, which is why I don't believe Johnny Manziel will go to Houston first. And he'd probably go in the first round, but he might be on the board when the Bills draft number 9 overall. We'll see. More draft talk tomorrow night. We're going to talk with Nickell Robey, Bills cornerback, tomorrow night. Greg Gabriel from National Football Post joining us tomorrow as well. That's coming up tomorrow night. We want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Explore what NOCO can do for you at NOCO.com. Our engineer tonight is Tom Reitz. Our producer, Jay Harris, and the Bills director of broadcasting is Jeff Matthews. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.